good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Budget 2024 was tabled in Dewan Rakyat today, and now the crucial evaluation begins. What does this budget get right, and where did it fall short? Joining me now is Sharil Hamdan. He's the founder and managing director of Watchtower Advisory, and he's also the former economic director at the Prime Minister's office. Sharil, good evening. Thank you for being on the show tonight. I'm just wondering what your initial reactions were to Budget 2024. Was this, in your opinion, a fiscally responsible budget? And did it get some of the country's most pressing economic priorities correct?
Hi, Melissa. So my focus really was to see three things and whether those three things were present in the budget speech. First was about details around capital gains tax and luxury goods tax, because we've heard that for months. And on that score, finally, there's some clarity. Second, I wanted to see fiscal details around how the government would support the implementation of NIMP, the new industrial master plan, as well as the energy transition roadmap. I think those two documents are clearly the two most detailed documents of the Madani government administration. And I felt there were some details. I wish there were more, but there were some fiscal details around those two documents. So that's fairly pleasing. And thirdly, wanted to see how brave the subsidy rationalization efforts would be. In that, on that score, I think there were some movements in the right direction. Maybe not as full scale as maybe some people speculated, but at least we're moving in the right direction. So on all those three areas where I was paying attention to most, I thought that the budget at least caught some good points.
Can I ask you, Sharil, you said that you were looking to see whether, you know, whether this budget would be brave to talk about the subsidy rationalisation. Now, Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim has been priming the ground for many months now, talking about the need for tax reform, the need for subsidy rationalisation, the need for targeted subsidies. But we didn't get many details, particularly on how the subsidy rationalisation would look like. There's just mention of it, but there were no specific details. And there was very little said, actually the silence was quite deafening, about the petrol subsidies. Can I get your thoughts on that?
I think you're broadly correct. I agree with your broad assessment. I think in terms of petrol subsidies, the fact that it was not mentioned probably means that it's not going to happen, at least in 2024. Seems like the government is happy to start with diesel, maybe test the water, see how the implementation process is, and if that goes through without too much of a hitch, then maybe 2025 is when you do the petrol subsidy rationalization. One wonders whether the political climate will be as friendly then, given that will be halfway through the term. But one hopes that that's the reason for why petrol was kind of jettisoned for 2024. The other two things that I caught in terms of subsidy rationalization or subsidy reduction, one was the cessation of subsidies and price controls for chicken and eggs, as well as the tariff, electricity tariff pricing. For 10%, as he mentioned it, the top 10 would have to pay something closer to the market price, whereas the 90% retains its subsidized tariff. Well, so yeah. I guess some details there,
right,
if you're being kind.
Sharon, what did you mean by, maybe we might see something in 2024, halfway through the term? Because, you know, there's often a debate about balancing short-term political considerations in budgets as well as with the long-term economic needs of the country. What does it say to you that the government chose to release very little detail in terms of targeted subsidy rationalisation for petrol? How are you reading the situation politically?
It's obviously going to be immensely risky to reduce subsidies for petrol, even if you target it only to a section of the community or a section of the population, because on the knock-on effects on prices and inflation overall. So maybe that's clearly going to be a driving factor against anybody trying to rush through subsidy rationalization in terms of fuel price or petrol prices. The other question that perhaps one has to be cognizant of is the mechanism for implementing such a wide-scale price discrimination if you were to do it at different tiered pricing for at the pump. That's immensely complicated too. And maybe we have to give some allowance to the government that maybe they need more time to finally land on what the mechanism is. Without giving too many details, when I was in government, I knew that that was one of the most difficult questions to answer. How would you actually do this? Would you actually discriminate price at the pump, or would you do some sort of rebate system after the fact? Both come with their pros and cons, and there are various options in between. So again, maybe this diesel thing is a way to try and test out an implementation mechanism that can then be, used to something a bit more significant like petrol.
Do you agree with the move to do this by going targeting diesel first? Was this the right move in your opinion?
I think on balance, an incrementalist approach was probably what they want to do.
Okay.
And and there's no reason you can't try and be braver halfway down 2024. Right, and that's something that they can think of later.
All right. I also wanted to ask you about how the focus of this budget on the economy and in terms of business and Malaysia's attractiveness to foreign investors. How did you take the allocations or the initiatives announced to make the country more attractive? An attractive proposition to foreign investors. Do you think this is a budget that the business community will welcome?
I think in terms of the NIMP, which is probably the thing that's closest to foreign investors and the investment community overall, there's a commitment here that of the 95 billion investments that are meant to come through the NIMP, 10%, up to 10%, are going to be fiscal, meaning it's going to be public, the public sector, government itself pumping in. That would come up to about 9.5 billion. However, if I read the speech right, it only starts with 200 million in 2024. So there might be some question marks as to why, if your target is to be close to 10 billion in terms of total government injection, in terms of the NIMP investments, why in 2024 are you only allocating 200 million? So that's one question that maybe the details, I haven't gone through, but that's a question that I had. Investment tax allowance, maybe that's something that the business community and investment community will be quite happy with, not just people who are not here yet, but people who are already here. So reinvestment would also be more attractive with this improvement in terms of the tax allowance. So those two things are the only ones that kind of jump out in terms of actual fiscal expenditure for the investment community. However, if you think more broadly, and I think your question was framed as such, it's not just at that level, but also how we do things to make the country more attractive in terms of talent. And I saw some measures to help with our MM2H, to help with visas and visit passes, and hopefully make Malaysia an attractive proposition for foreign talent as well.
Mm. All right. But for domestic businesses, in the lead up to Budget 2024, there was a lot of comments, or there was a lot of announcements saying that it's going to be focused on SMEs. And there were quite a number of initiatives for SMEs. But one of the things that I couldn't find a lot of details on, or I felt was missing, was the progressive wage model policy or more announcements on that. Was that a glaring omission not to announce anything about this? How do you read that?
Absolutely. That is, if I had to pick one glaring omission, that would have been it, Melissa, because the economic minister was quite clear that the mechanism would include cash incentives, right? I think a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, he mentioned that quite explicitly. So one would have thought, okay, so if it's cash incentive or any kind of fiscal incentive for employers to pay people better, then it would have been tabled in Budget 2024. So its omission is quite glaring.
Right. And so, okay, now we move to the social safety net of the country. What did you make of the announcements and the allocations that could help the most those who need it the most. Did you find any groups that perhaps were missed out, or was this an inclusive budget in your opinion?
Yeah, Melissa, this is the favorite question every year, right? Is this an inclusive budget? Did everybody get their fair share? Look, the honest answer is I've got to read through the entire document, which I haven't. Can't even remember every word that the PM said. But on the surface, you know, your regular segments, people that would always be mentioned, I think were mentioned. I couldn't recall anything that was, you know, glaringly omitted in terms of different segments that usually get mentioned for cash aid, for subsidies, whether it was the you know, the paddy farmers, the fishermen community, all of them got either the same or more kind of subsidies, right? So that was, you know, nothing jumped out in a negative way for me.
Okay. Well, given your experience as former economic advisor to the Prime Minister, you have, you know, particular insight of how the negotiations or the trade-offs are considered before a budget is designed or conceived. Talk to me about what you see, or what this budget reflects to you about this Madani government's economic priorities.
The restructuring of the economy, which is one of the big terms the PM always uses alongside Tata Kelola governance, this budget begins to paint a picture of what he means by this. So it's clear that he's serious about broadening the tax base. That, for me, is a significant restructuring. It's clear to me that he's serious about subsidy rationalization, maybe less clear than he is on the former, but at least the steps towards subsidy rationalization, and we've discussed earlier as to why maybe the sequencing of it has to be a bit more careful considering politics. It's also clear to me that the rhetoric is about making sure that there's more allocation to the less well-off and taking from the well-off. That's almost as important as what you do is how you frame it. This is kind of consistent with Anwar Ibrahim we've known for years. So I hope, you know, broadly speaking, that this is what he focuses on. And if this is what the next 12 months, 24 months is about, then I think it's going to be more interesting and exciting. And he doesn't get sidetracked by other kind of politics and get sidetracked by other kind of you know, considerations that are not in line with this story of economic restructuring for the bigger community and not for the few.
Shahril, thank you so much for speaking with me. That was Shahril Hamdan. We're going to take a very quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more budget analysis after this. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. If you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing Budget 2024 tonight, which was tabled in Dewan Rakyat earlier today. Joining us now, we have Robert Nicholas Hee. He's the Vice President for the Society for Equality, Respect and Trust for All Sabah, better known as Serata. He's also part of the Gender Budget Group. Robert, good evening. Thank you for joining me on the show today. First reaction, initial thoughts, was this a gender-responsive budget? Did you get a sense that an intersectional gender lens was applied in the design of this budget?
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for having me. I think, quite honestly, the bar for what a gender-responsive budget is quite high, especially given that there isn't a lot of data to work on. And the short answer is no. Like, I don't think the budget was very, very gender responsive. What I can definitely say is that the budget itself was a very responsive budget. It accounted for a lot of needs from the community and social issues. And how realistically that we are a very diverse set of issues, from ranging from the men and women to the disabled, to even the creative types, as well as or even the entrepreneurial types, right? Like, it's not a straightforward answer to, like, to being gender responsive.
Right. So, Robert, if I just may jump in here, you know, you said that it is a responsive budget, maybe not the most gender responsive one. Can you maybe talk us through what a gender responsive budget looks like? What are some of the key elements that make you say, well, this one does look at it through a gender lens?
So looking at it through a gender lens really has you accepting that it is about multiple sects of society that include not just men and women, but even children, the disabled, people of less opportunity, people of poverty, people of, like, even Sabah and Sarawak in this case. So in this budget, you could see, for example, that a lot of focus was put onto Sabah and Sarawak, but not so much on whether these opportunities distill down to men and women. Or even in a program like, say, iSuri, the Soxo initiative by iSuri, where it's not, it only counts housewives instead of also looking at husbands or single parents.
Right. Please continue.
And really, that's what it boils down to, having to desegregate the data to be able to count the multiple variances in society and take care of everyone in a measure that is equitable to everyone.
If you were to compare with the previous budget, the retabled 2023 budget, how does it compare? I remember speaking about gender responsiveness of that budget, and yes, there were some, you know, gaps, but there were initiatives that that allowed for the gender disparity to be addressed. Would you say the previous budget was a bit more gender responsive compared to this one?
I think you definitely saw evidence of that in the last budget, but the last budget was also very I would say very industrial by nature. It was designed to be a very economically incentive, whereas this budget has more of a social narrative with the number of, you know, programs that he's looking to attach to, and with the focus, you know, like even among some sport issues, you can see him talking about water access, hospital access, as well as even mobile courts and mobile systems within the Sabah Sarawak region. These are things that are synonymous to West Malaysians per se, and it's only that this sensitivity boils down to is included in the budget. Compared to, like, say, last year's budget, you know, you can see more initiatives being put to, say, children. They announced continuance of funding for the TASCA within government offices program. Okay. Whereas this budget, you see more list across
where he's looking to affect, say, the creative industry, or he's looking to affect people within different agricultural societies. Whereas, you know, you don't see, you know, data for people with disability, which is one of the biggest groups of people that you can affect.
So when you look at the budget's allocation for resources specific to Sabah and Sarawak, what was missing? What could have been improved? And I also want to know whether the allocations will help address some of the gender-related challenges, particularly in the Borneo territories.
Right. I think on a large scale, the answer is yes, because, you know, like, the budget will affect people in, say, like, even in, let's say, the school allocation, with the variance with the acceptance that there are more women in schools
today, you obviously are going to affect women more. Right, but what we also have to accept that, let's say, in the Borneo territories, with these large allocations and with, say, that institutions are not naturally geared to look after a gender-responsive system, like how the Ketua Kampungs, for example, are largely all men. And that means that access to women's societies may not necessarily be immediately evident, as well as the reporting systems that go back to how do we measure whether or not these sort of funds reach these communities. This is all very important points, because in Borneo, we don't really have a way to systemize data collection. We don't really have a way to reach these sort of places where data is the most necessary. So, you know, what ends up happening is that we have large budget allocations, but we don't really have a way to properly monitor all of it.
Right. So if you were to make recommendations to enhance the, not just the equality in terms of the equity in terms of the allocation to the Borneo territories, but also the gender responsiveness of future budgets, given what was missing from this year and what can be improved from this year's budget, what would you recommend? What would you like to see? What would you propose to be enhanced in future budgets?
I think what I would like to see first and foremost is an acceptance that certain budgetary programs do affect very disparate groups between one another. Like some really affect men more than others, some really affect women more than others. And if we are to accept that a gender responsive budget is doing its job, is to be able to accept that a budget will reach each sort of like division in ways that are targeted, in ways that are actually, you know, like equitable. So with the next budget, I'd like to see more of a, you know, way, an acceptance of data, right? Having the data that actually shows what kind of programs are being filled, what is the efficacy of these programs that leads to the information that will lead to the next budget, and where, what is the breakdown of this, you know, like data that allows you to make these informed choices? As a civil society, we always want to make sure that the efficacy of funds is used to its best potential, and making sure that the money that reaches the ground creates the most amount of impact. And more importantly, a budget should work the same way.
Right. Robert, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I appreciate your time. Robert Nicholas He there from Serata, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.